This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more, this is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, NIL Game Changers, and Sunbury Motor Company. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Opening half hour brought to you by NIL Game Changers, the ultimate destination for name, image, and likeness opportunities for both athletes and businesses. Visit NILGameChangers.org to start your journey. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. I believe we get out of the gate today with Sweeney Murdy, don't we? Yes, no?
Yes, he is on the line.
He is on the line. Sweeney, my friend, welcome back. It's so great to hear you.
Am I leading off today, Jonesy?
You are the leadoff hitter today, all right? Yeah, you're the guy in the leadoff spot.
Big McBride shoes on and ready to roll.
Okay, well, that means you get on base, we're running. It's one of the great things when you're around major leaguers, or at least former major leaguers, is it's so important to listen. I remember when Willie McGee came into State College, he was the base running coach for the Cardinals organization. You sat there and listened to the guy. What's that been like for you, so closely associated with the game, the listening part? And maybe what are one or two things that you picked up along the way that you just either never thought of or never knew about?
You know, I think the whole key sometimes is to figure out what they want to talk to you about, right? Like, what do they like to talk about? Yeah. And, I mean, I guess I kind of had an advantage because I was there every day, so I could kind of take my time to get to know these guys. And, you know, if that one conversation didn't click the first time, then you come in and out. Eventually, you come up with something that you can tell that somebody's passionate about or is interested in. And you just kind of get to know them that way. I remember a funny story. Tom Keegan, who used to work for the New York Post, and I forget where he is now. I think he's in Boston now. But he told me a story one time. Remember Jose Vidro from the Expos?
Of course.
Second baseman, really good hitter, right? Keegan told me a story one time how he was trying to interview Vidro and was getting nothing from him. Like, it's just like one-word answers, not, you know, and really not getting anywhere. I was kind of just kind of looked him in the eye and he said, "Best fastball hitter in the game right there," pointing to Vidro. All of a sudden the world opened up, right? Like he couldn't stop talking about like his approach and hitting and all that. You know, he wanted to talk about hitting and it just took a second to get there. You know, this is part of kind of what you do. Like you spend time in a clubhouse and you just observe. You know, Yogi Berra said you could observe a lot by watching, right?
Right.
That was kind of the trick here. One of the things that we are kind of entrusted with is telling people what it's like inside the clubhouse, and you kind of have to stand and watch and listen a lot to really take that in. So, you know, I think that was the advantage I had. Listen, I covered clubhouses daily for 22 years. And that's something great that you pick up on just by... Those are one of my favorite things about batting practice, Jonesy. I used to stand, you know, the New York Yankees beat had a lot of, and the New York Yankees in general have a lot of media. But during batting practice for the 45 minutes or an hour, I used to like to stand off to the side a little bit in my own spot where I could kind of observe hitters, like just listen to the hitters talk or coaches. Maybe catch, you know, you're not up close enough to the cage sometimes, just the way security is and all that, but you're trying to just pick up little things about how people interact with each other and things like that. And those are just little details and maybe things you can come back to and talk to guys about. But it really comes back to figuring out what that guy wants to talk about. And once you do that, you know, you have a pretty good, you know, chance of getting to know him better.
Well, what does that do then in turn? Not just the perspective you can give on a show like this, but also what does it do to give you perspective on the right kind of questions to ask people, because now you picked up enough background?
Yeah, I mean, I always just kind of looked at it as, you know, I think there are a lot of people who want to ask good questions, but they look at it more in terms of the question they're asking than the answer they're getting. And, like, to me, maybe I'll fumble around a question, but there's a point to get there. Like, I need to get the answer. It's always about the answer you're looking for. And it's, you know, it's more of a conversation than asking the question, mm-hmm. right? And I've never liked the style of talk about this or talk about that.
I hate that.
I mean, nobody does that in real conversation, right? Like, you don't say, you know, hey, talk about lunch today. Well, what'd you have for lunch? Hey, where'd you go? There's a very easy way to get a question out if you're doing that. So, but even, you know, kind of straying from that, it's more just, sometimes it's just a conversation about stuff as opposed to interviewing them. I've never liked to tell people I want to interview them. I tell them I want to talk to them, right? And sometimes the setting is really, you know, is important too. And just to the idea of kind of this whole thing that we've just been talking about 2 years ago when Aaron Judge is in his monster season, it's August, and he's, you know, climbing up towards 60 home runs, I kind of made a point to say, listen, I need 5 minutes from you today. And he was at the point in the season where everybody wants 5 minutes from him today, you know, and it's hard to get that. But I went up to him during batting practice, and I hadn't really bothered him a lot during the course of the last month or so, probably. So because I'd been around, you know, every day, I'd seen him since he was a rookie, and I'm there all the time. And when I say, hey, Aaron, you know, I need 5 minutes from you today. I can wait till after, you know, after BP. I can wait for you. We can do it in the dugout. We can do it away from people, wherever you want. And he kind of, I think, understood that it was important for me, and he said, sure. So he meets me in the dugout after batting practice, and like, that's kind of a casual setting still. And I think that's important. You know, you're in their environment. So we sat in the dugout, and we talked about a few different things. It ended up being like, I lied, it wasn't 5 minutes. It was more like 12. I think I said I need 10 minutes, and I took 12. I said, I owe you 2 minutes back, and kind of chuckled. But we hit on a couple of different things, and it turned into three different stories for me, including one about how he remembered hunting down Jonathan Sanchez at a Giants game when he was a kid for an autograph, and how that little moment, getting an autograph from a big leaguer, became this great moment for him. And I tracked down Jonathan Sanchez and told him that Aaron Judge, the biggest star in the game right now, remembers getting your autograph, and he was tickled to death. You know, and that became a story idea for me. And you know, we talked about his pursuit and what he thought about the holding the record or attaining the record. And those are, you know, it just kind of flowed from a conversation, Jonesy, and partly these stories were built about the relationship that you have when you're there every day and you're not trying to bother them every day, right?
Right.
If you're, you know, that's another thing. Like, if you have people who want to cover teams and have star players, yeah, okay, you're going to have to talk to the star player a lot, but sometimes it's just as important to not talk to them.
Right.
Go talk to the other guys, leave them alone, so that when you come back to that guy, he's going to know it's really important that, you know, they're always watching. That's the thing that I learned. They're always watching you. You know, they have such great attention to detail. When you talk to athletes about, you know, think about, like, when you're scouting that pitcher or scouting the other team or the other team's defense, they'll tell you in intricate detail, I saw this and I saw that and I knew it meant this. Mm-hmm. They have that attention to detail. They're watching how media interacts with them. They're watching how media interacts with other people. Phil Hughes, pitcher for the Yankees, pretty good pitcher for a little while. And he told me that he watched how, when he first came up, he watched how Derek Jeter interacted with the media, and it told him a lot about, you know, who he trusted, who he didn't trust, who he liked, you know, how much time he gave them, you know, like what, you know, his level of politeness and openness and things like that. And it taught Phil Hughes a lot about how he wanted to conduct himself. Luckily for me, I got along with Derek, and Derek treated me well, so Phil treated me well. But it was more about the idea that these guys are always watching and observing, and the detail they put into scouting their opponents in the game also goes into their interactions with the media. So when you're trying to, you know, get to these guys and interview them or do stories, features, whatever you need to do, you know, just the way you carry yourself in the room when you're talking to them or when you're not talking to them is just as important. They're always out there just kind of gathering their own information on you. And they pay attention. Whether they say they don't read it or listen to it or whatever, they've got friends and family who do. So whatever you said about them or wrote about them, whatever, it'll get back to them. And as long as it's professional, I think everybody is cool with it.
And then in that vein, you did a piece with Robbie Thompson, the manager of the Phillies. What did you learn about that and about him and maybe you did not know before?
Well, what I really was trying to get at, I talked to Thompson. This was actually back in, I think it was right before spring training when I talked to him about this. Mm-hmm. What I was really trying to get at is that there are so many young players coming up today, and teams are trusting them more. And, you know, the Phillies had a way of incorporating some pretty young players in, and you know, with veteran guys like JT Realmuto and Bryce Harper, obviously. And I kind of want to talk to him about how that developed. And he told me that it had a lot to do with, and I know Rob from his time with the Yankees. He said it had a lot to do with that, and when Joe Girardi became manager of the Yankees before the 2008 season, Rob Thompson was his bench coach then, and they said, you know, our veteran players and our young players really don't interact at all. And in spring training, they're pretty much separate groups. And when a young player comes up to the big leagues, like, he's in awe of his surroundings, and sometimes it shows because they don't perform very well. So, you know, there's got to be a way to fix that, and you know, Girardi and Thompson drew up this idea, just have them, you know, interact more in spring training, whether it was in drills and or on backfields or even in their, like, off-field activities that they drew up, the kind of how the team bonding thing. It wasn't just going to be the veterans hanging out together and then the rookies hanging out together. They need these guys to mix so that when a player comes into the clubhouse and he gets called up on May 15th, and he has to start today, he's not going to be in awe. He's going to know the people around him. You know, Joe Girardi said he walked in his first big league clubhouse straight from Double A, and here's Ryan Sandberg on one side of him and Andre Dawson on the other. He was intimidating. You know, and this is a guy who spent 15 years in the big leagues eventually. You know, he had the talent and the determination, but he was still, you know, he was still intimidated by this. Well, you know, Tom said to me that, you know, this was Joe's idea. And, you know, sure as hell, it's exactly what happened. When these guys came up, they felt more comfortable, and they were more at ease. And getting them into the lineup and putting them in Yankee Stadium around 50,000 people and putting them into a Yankees Red Sox game on a Sunday night, you know, these are the things that I think sometimes we don't really understand how big of a deal it is for the players and how, you know, everything they have to go through to prepare for this and get themselves ready to play and, you know, try to get a couple of hits off the best pitchers in the world, those kinds of things. That's what their jobs are. You know, the coaches and the managers and the best ones take such good care of trying to get their players ready and trying to anticipate all these things and getting their head on straight. So, you know, Rob Thompson came from a minor league background where his job is for minor league players for the big leagues. And as he becomes a bench coach and eventually a manager, he's incorporating a lot of this. And the Phillies' success in the last couple of years has really come from this idea that they're a they're a family, and anybody who comes in there, when they get called up, they're ready to go. And it's not like old days when rookies were ostracized and they were hazed, and, you know, basically it was a big leaguer didn't want a kid coming up and taking his job, so, you know, they're going to push him every chance they could to see if they were tough enough. And that's really not how you do it anymore. This is also an idea that, you know, Girardi and Thompson saw firsthand with the Yankees. You know, C.C. Sabathia told me he got pushed around a lot when he was a rookie, and he hated it. He had veterans in the Cleveland team that just didn't like him or treated him poorly, and he vowed that if he was ever going to be a veteran who had that kind of influence, he was not going to let that happen. Well, as the core four aged out and the baby bombers came in the middle part of the last decade, C.C. Sabathia is a big veteran presence in the Yankees clubhouse. Joe Girardi's the manager, Rob Thompson's the bench coach, and C.C. kind of helped usher these guys in and welcomed everybody in, and it really had a huge impact on how the 2017 Yankees made it all the way to Game 7 of the ALCS. These young kids came in with an expectation to perform, with a little less anxiety about it. They were good, obviously, and, you know, and they took it that far. The Phillies are using some of that, and Girardi pointed out how Alec Boehm struggled a bit after a good start when he first came up, and Bryson Stott struggled a bit. You know, these guys are probably all-stars this year, and they're leading the Phillies to the best record in the league, and who knows where they can go because of where they've been these last couple of years. They're drawing on that experience and the culture that Thompson and Girardi built together, first in New York, and then, kind of coincidentally, because they didn't come together on their own in Philadelphia. You know, Thompson was hired by Gabe Kapler, then stayed on when Girardi took over for Kapler, and then took over when Girardi was let go. You know, it was, you know, they're working off of that template. And I kind of find that fascinating because that's interactions of players in the clubhouse and how things have changed. It is no longer, you know, the veteran player is just kind of saying, all right, let's see if this kid can cut it. They're doing everything they can to make sure those players can cut it because they know how important they are. Why would you sabotage your own team when these players are here to help you win? The more comfortable you allow them to be, the better they will play for you, the better your chances are to win. And that's the culture that is, it's not just there, it's being built many places, but, you know, as far back as I can see, you know, Girardi and Thompson took a real interest in changing that with the Yankees when they were together in 2008, and then starting for a 10-year period, they won a World Series together in 2009. And, you know, what the Phillies have built this year, certainly Rob Thompson is front and center, but, you know, Girardi's fingerprints are on too because of their work together.
No question. What they did was they took away the insecurity of the veterans. That's what they did. It's actually not like, you know, helping the rookies along. They took away the insecurity of the veterans. We then felt secure enough to go out and say, hey, look, what do you need from me? We need to win. I mean, that's essentially what they did. Sweeney, thanks
and
so
times,
much.
The times have changed because, you know,
yeah,
you know, the long-term contract really helps. You know, this isn't 50 years ago and guys are on one-year contracts and like, this kid's not going to take my job, you know. You get a guy who has a long-term deal, all of a sudden he's like, okay, listen, I'm good here. Like, let's win. Let's do it.
Right. Exactly. Well put. Great talking with you. Really was. Thanks so much for the time. Always appreciate any chance I get to talk with you.
I never know where this is going to go. It's fun just kind of pulling up a chair and talking to you. So thanks so much for having me.
That's about what we do here. You know, it's like that. You know, we hope that in the end it's an interesting, fun conversation for everybody involved, especially the listener. And you do that.
Thanks, Jonesy. Appreciate you, man.
You too. Sweetie
Murray.
Hey,
happy early Father's Day to you.
Oh, thanks. You too. You too. You have a beautiful family, by the way. Beautiful family. All right.
Sir.
You bet.
We'll come back with more in a moment. Today's show, this half hour, brought to you by NIL Game Changers, the ultimate destination for name, image, and likeness opportunities, both athletes and businesses. Visit NILGameChangers.org to start your journey today here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
Spring has sprung, and it's time to dust off those insurance policies. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855 or visit our website at purdyinsurance.com to see what we can do for you.
Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And this half hour brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and out every day. Six great flavors of slushies. And the pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills, indeed, second to none. All the Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. So you showed up for work today, huh?
Yeah, I decided to come in.
Wow. Big of you.
They must have gotten hammered in the Lancaster, Hershey, Elizabethtown area, because that's the only games that were postponed, actually, so far.
Oh. Well, we had heavy rain here overnight, and then sunny here now. It's nice here now. So.
I was going to say it's sunny here now, too, but they're playing a state playoff game in Bloomsburg that they're at Bloomsburg University that they're getting ready to batten down the hatches, so must be scattered.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I know I have the opening ceremonies for Pennsylvania Summer Special Olympics tonight, and the weather looks great for it, so I have no problem there. Matt Cotrillo note, Eagles owner Jeffrey Lurie is interested in selling a minority stake in the Eagles, looking for about $7.5 billion. But he would still maintain controlling interest in the team, according to Bloomberg. Lurie and his son Julian moving up in the ranks of the Eagles organization to one day take over the team. This is an opportunity for Matt to own a piece of the Philadelphia Eagles, with the idea that he could then help make decisions. No?
Mark and Luke's shoulders just slumped. They realized how many lawns they have to mow now.
Oh, I mean, let's face it. Those kids are getting no inheritance in life. None. Zero.
Not if he buys a stake in the Eagles.
Ugh. See that now?
That'll kill the nest egg.
I'm in charge. Oh, God. A lot of people getting fired.
That would have been an interesting reaction to the end of last year then.
He would just, I mean, there would have been heads rolling all over NovaCare.
We're probably lucky he's young. He would have been, he's a couple years short of being the golden age of George Steinbrenner as a Yankees fan, too. He could have had that influence as well.
Oh, I know. I'm telling you, he's got a lot of Steinbrenner in him, right? And you'd want people out in early. But again, the staggering part is that a minority interest is $7.5 billion. I mean, that. What does that tell you about the value of an NFL franchise, that's a minority interest?
It's pretty much unfathomable.
I know. It's stunning in so many ways.
I wonder if Josh Harris would have wanted to wait it, or he would have wanted to be a majority owner, I guess.
With the Eagles?
Yeah, he waits a year, but I guess you'd rather own your own team, wouldn't you?
You don't know if these opportunities are going to come up.
Yeah, that's true.
And I don't think that... I don't think that you can sit there and guess and anticipate a minority. But I think a guy like Harris wants to be the majority owner, the guy that has more power than anybody else. Not because he's power hungry. I'm just saying that would want to be.
Well, you don't get to that level in finance and like those guys has with that, without wanting to be in charge of stuff.
Right, exactly. I mean, look at the pathway of the suit. All right, so, I have no words.
Mini David Tepper.
That's actually pretty good. Because Tepper at one point was a minority owner of the Steelers. Yeah. And I think a lot of people forget that. That was the pathway that opened the door for him to get the Carolina Panthers, and he was not the high bidder for the Carolina Panthers. His bid was number two, but because of his reputation with the Steelers and that they knew him, that's how he ended up getting the bid. Then there's this one. I talked about this a month or two ago, and it was about analysts and the idea that you can have an unlimited number, and they could get more money out of it, and actually would be allowed to coach on the field. So John Talty of CBS Sports posted this 3 hours ago, and he was talking about how the analyst position that Nick Saban did a great job with it over the years. You know, he brought in Mike Locksley as an analyst. He's now the head coach at Maryland. He brought in Steve Sarkisian as an analyst, and now he's the head coach at Texas. And Locksley and Sarkisian actually were the ones that were helping Lane Kiffin, and their job was third down and red zone strategy. Between the two of them, they combined to make a total of $80,000. All right. So it worked out for each because it allowed them to each rehabilitate their images. Sarkisian, of course, had been fired at USC, off the field issues. Locksley had a lousy record at New Mexico State and an off the field issue. And going to Alabama helped rehabilitate them as coaches and their images. And Locks ended up being the head coach at Maryland. Sarkisian eventually ends up the head coach at Texas. All right. So, one thing that Kalen DeBoer has done at Alabama is that they have slimmed down the number of off-the-field analysts from 12 to 8. Okay? Now, part of this is that they now have a general manager by the name of Courtney Morgan. Okay. All right. Charlie Strong had been there, former head coach at Texas, gone. Derek Dooley, former head coach at Tennessee, now gone. John McNulty, who had been the offensive coordinator at Rutgers, gone. Jamie Mosley, former Alabama linebacker. All right. So, Alabama in 2023 spent $1 million on analysts, according to public records. They also listed 69 off-field staffers in the 2023 media guide, including 5 in recruiting, 4 in player personnel, 3 in player development, 2 special assistants, one of them being Ken Wisenhunt, who was here, by the way, for a couple of years. Ken's a terrific guy. A great coach, but terrific guy. I like and respect Ken a lot. Billy Napier at Florida allocated $5 million of salary pool for off-field analysts and other personnel. Napier said at the time, quote, "We're going to hire an army of people here. We're going to create and infrastructure, not only in the personnel department, but also from an on-campus recruiting, creative media, name, image, and likeness. We've got a great vision for the organization that we're going to create here. And again, Alabama and Clemson, right, along the way, had a lot of people in those positions. Right? They even had a person in charge of game-changing coordinator. But after 11 wins in 2 years, okay, right, the off-the-field position requests are now coming under scrutiny. Here's the big problem that they have. And this is where you're going to sit down and have to take a look at it as a football coach and an athletic director. The places like Alabama, Clemson, Penn State, whatever, now starting next year have to come up with $22 million a year. How do you do it? We've talked about how you do it in terms of sponsorships, corporate, so forth. Okay? You also may come up with it with cutting back. And there are going to be shrinking budgets, and because of that, that may end up reducing the number of analyst jobs. Now, the pending legislation that could change the very nature of the position is sitting there. The FBS Oversight Committee passed a proposal last month that would eliminate the current cap of 10 on-field assistant coaches and allow analysts, grad assistants, and quality control staffers to directly coach players. That vote, by the way, is not coming up until the end of the month. Now, last year, it looked for sure to pass with the momentum. It actually, a year ago, got rejected. This is one of the few rules that has come back to be looked at again. And normally they don't look at it back at it again unless they think it has an excellent chance of passing. But that won't be until the end of the month. But the rising costs are one of the reasons that schools may take a closer look as to how many people they have on staff.
You talk a lot about unintended consequences. They make this decision. You know, we talk a lot about the schedule of, for example, Coach Franklin's schedule, you know, between the end of the season and the bowl games. If more of that stuff goes on to the coaching staff, doesn't that make the job more difficult for them?
It makes it difficult for everybody.
Yeah,
I mean, look, the bottom line is this. Football is the economic driver of all sports on campus. It is. If they think they need 15 assistant coaches to get the job done, give them 15 assistant coaches. Okay? If that's what they feel like it takes to get the job done. Oh, and by the way, it doesn't work. You know that you have the ability to move on to somebody else. The one area that I feel like you can't really cut back on is football. Basketball already has, for example. I mean, you have, let's face it, not quite 10% of the players, but close. Okay, 13 scholarships. You know, 120 football players usually. Maybe 125, 15 basketball players, including a couple of walk-ons. I do realize that scholarships limits are going to go away. And that's going to be part of this settlement, that those scholarship limits are going to go away. But you still have to be careful about how far you take it. And you also have to be very careful about what the structure of the organization happens to be moving forward. And I realize that Title IX comes into play here with what you're doing with one sport versus another sport. But there has to be an economic reality to this. And and yet they're and they don't deal well for the most part in college athletics in the economic reality of it. And I don't want to in any way, shape, or form take away what other sports are doing. But in a business, and this is a business, in a business, there are certain economic realities. I always use the Ford Lincoln Mercury proposal. Okay, can I ask you why there's no longer the Mercury line? It didn't sell enough. So in business, you move on and you consolidate into what works. College sports, there's a lot of money in it. And you have to make business decisions, but the reality is it's not run like a business. I mean, when you have 31 divisions of your company and 29 of them don't make money and you continue to fund them, right? Normal business doesn't run that way. And that's fine. Right? As long as you have the money to make it work, right, the whole thing work, I'm perfectly fine with it. I don't mind losing money on something else to make the whole thing work. But at the same time, the parts that do make it work, I think you have to go out of your way to give them what they need to make it work, because guess what? They're the economic driver. So you have to have some business sense to go in with something that business-wise actually doesn't work. Am I far off on that, or?
I don't think so, and I think that's going to be, I think we've talked about this before. I think, you know, you said you thought it would happen in the pandemic. I don't think there's any way that some of these sports at some of these schools don't get cut.
I don't want any, the reason I don't want sports cut anywhere is simple, is that I want people to have opportunities. Right? I want somebody else to be the next Caitlin Clark. Okay, I want that opportunity. I want somebody else to be the next great women's soccer player to go out there. I want all that. I think that's really important. The opportunities. I don't care whether it's fencing or whether it happens to be swimming and diving or men's and women's lacrosse, whatever. I want the opportunity there. But I would like to also see some realism come into play, that there's only so far financially you can take certain things. And and that you have to understand who the economic drivers are and why they're getting more of what's happening there, because guess what? It's best for the entire group that they do. Or at least it gives you the best shot at giving everybody the best shot. I think there has to be some realism there.
And, I don't think it comes at the Penn State level, the Texas level. I think we've talked about this before. I think it comes at the Middle American Conference level. Even in this new Big 12, I don't know how some of these schools come up with this, whatever the percentage of the
22%,
budget. 22%. Yeah, 22% of the budget plus pay for some of these sports that don't make money.
Well, it's interesting. They just did a big press release on the Big 12. More money than ever before, right, that they distributed, which is true. $470 million. But it's a fraction of what the Big Ten and the SEC got. And they had to divide, again, remember, they had to divide it up 14 ways. And guess what everybody got? Less. And that's with Houston, Cincinnati, UCF, and BYU getting half. They all got half. Everybody got less than the year before. That's what I'm talking about, the pie. This is what I'm talking about. You have to take a moment to really read into it. And I took the time to read it. And when I took the time to read it, I'm like going, oh, well, everybody got less. Okay, because there were more mouths to feed at the pie. That's what I'm talking about. Like, the headline is one thing. If you are stuck just reading headlines, you will learn nothing. Okay? You'll learn nothing. Now, the big headline today is whether Danny Hurley will take the Lakers job.
I kind of wish this would have bloat tomorrow. I bet that would send the king into a frenzy.
Well, I mean, I've got a couple thoughts on that. And we'll talk about it next half hour. This half hour brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. Six great flavors of slushies. Pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills, my two favorites, indeed, second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. While Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.
You want your young athlete to get the most out of life and NIL. You need a roadmap, a strategic approach. NIL Game Changers help student athletes earn while they learn in their collegiate journey. Driven by former student athletes and coaches who work as NIL sports agents and content media designers, they'll guide both student and family, starting with high school students looking toward college and those already in college. Get a seasoned team of marketing experts with a background in athletics and coaching. Visit NILGameChangers.org, the ultimate destination for name, image, and likeness opportunities.
All right, next half hour we'll talk about Danny Hurley. We'll also talk about D-Day 80 years later. I would have done it right out of the gate today, but we had Sweeney right out of the gate today, so that's why we delayed it an hour. So we'll do that, and then we'll talk about Danny Hurley, about maybe coaching the Lakers. Interesting. Soup applied for the job. Like all the others he applied for, the circular file came into play. What?
It's kind of interesting to me that that was supposedly J.J. Redick's job until they supposedly talked to him this week, and now all of a sudden they want to throw a bunch of money at Danny Hurley.
Well, I'll talk about that in a moment, because I think it brings with it some interesting dynamics. I mean, money's one thing. But there's more to it than just money. This half hour brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket, and News Radio 1070 WKOK. Okay.